tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday, the 27th of March, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. We've reached the end of another week, and you know what that means? That means we have a special guest with us today. We have Grandpa Dan, all the way from Texas. Grandpa, how are you doing, sir? How is life treating you?
It's treating me with a big dose of deja vu. I feel like I've just got into a time machine and gone back in time. As I look at today's story, it's like we're back in the early 2020s, right around 2020, 2021. The UK, once again, has still not got the memo that nobody else is doing the woke thing, but apparently they're still... This could be a story we were doing 5 years ago, Sven. And we're still doing it in 2026, amazingly enough.
We are still waving the woke flag over here in Britain, but we're not talking about trannies today, at least. Today we're going to talk about something that's going to happen to William Shakespeare's birthplace. It is to be decolonized over fears that his success benefits the ideology of white European supremacy, or at least that is what the Daily Mail tells us. William Shakespeare's birthplace will be decolonized over fears that portraying his success as the greatest playwright benefits the ideology of white European supremacy. Shakespeare's Birthplace Trust, which owns buildings in the playwright's hometown of Stratford-upon-Avon, wants to create a more inclusive museum experience and announced it will move away from Western perspectives after concerns were raised that Shakespeare's ideas were used to advance white supremacy ideas. The Trust also said that some of its items could contain language or depictions that are racist, sexist, or homophobic. It comes amidst an ongoing backlash against the writer. Some productions of his works have been slapped with trigger warnings for misogyny, racism, and problematic, radicalized dynamics that link whiteness to beauty. Shock, horror that they're linking whiteness to beauty. Well, beauty is objective. It's not just subjective. It's all to do with perspective and symmetry and the golden mean. And white people are a lot more in tune with the golden mean than these other races, which is why white people are preferred. If you ask any of these races which females they find most attractive, they will all say that it's white women that are the most attractive. So they're really just basically going against reality here. I mean, saying they want to create a more inclusive museum experience, so they're going to move away from Western perspectives. Well, Shakespeare was Western, so surely we should be talking about his perspective, not the perspectives of other people. I mean, how can you diversify it? I mean, it says that they're portraying his success as the greatest playwright benefits the ideology of white European supremacy. Well, is he not the greatest playwright then? I mean, what other playwrights are there? Are there black playwrights? I mean, surely he is seen as the greatest playwright, but they're now saying that we can't say that because he's white. So we can no longer have excellence if it is linked to a white person. No white people can be excellent. We have to raise up all the people that are non-white and say that they are excellent, which again just flies straight in the face of reality. Grandpa, what do you make of this?
I go back to many moons ago when we used to argue with people like this on social media. And one of the things I learned early on is you always got to nail people down. And I talked about this a little bit on last week's show that we did, Sven. And one of the first things you need to do is you always have to nail them down on the definitions of words. And I would find that arguing with these sorts of people, if you tried, as soon as you started trying to nail them down on these definitions of words, they fell apart very quickly. You know, they throw these things out there and we're all supposed to just take them in stride. They count on that. And I'm a big believer that words have to have actual meaning because, you know, otherwise how do you communicate? You know, if you take words and that have, you know, what we think is a well-understood meaning, and then they redefine them, you can't have an actual discussion. Now, in this article, and it's full of it, and I'm going to continue to point them out because that's about the most entertaining thing I can find about this gibberish, is they're just throwing random terms out here, and I have no idea what any of this stuff means. When you really stop and think about it, what do any of these terms mean? What does it mean to decolonize Shakespeare? I mean, I have no idea what that means. How do you decolonize? Who's he colonizing? What, you know, what is somebody else's country? They go squat in someone else's country and take it over and say it's theirs. Some plays. It doesn't make any sense. The ongoing backlash against the writer. Backlash from who? You know, the backlash. You know, you're supposed to read that and just say, oh, wow, there's people that are really offended. But no, who? Two people on Twitter that no one's ever heard of? I mean, who? What is this backlash? There is no backlash. They're just saying there is. This is sort of like whenever we learned during COVID, whenever they whip out and say, the experts say. Anytime I hear a news story or read something and they throw in the experts, first question I have in my mind is, what experts? Paid by who? It matters who the experts are. You know, some productions of his works have been slapped with trigger warnings by who? They're like we did on the show we did last week's fan. You know, there was a committee of what, like 50 people, and they're going on about democracy. And then when we got deep into the story, you know, it was a little committee, exclusive committee of 50 people unilaterally making the decisions themselves. Democracy has nothing to do with it. And then, of course, you just have a bunch of emotionally charged words, misogyny, racism, and another problematic radicalized dynamics. Again, I have no idea what that means. You don't either. Nobody listening to this does. And I guarantee if you could talk to these people and say, tell me what that means, they couldn't tell you. They would squirm. They would wiggle around. They don't ever want you to stop and ask them, hey, wait a minute, what does problematic radicalized dynamics mean? What the hell does that even mean? They can't tell you. I 100% guarantee the people spewing this garbage out, they can't tell you what it means because it has no meaning. It's just supposed to make you feel like, oh, wow, you're supposed to feel emotional. You're supposed to feel guilty. Luckily, we've been dealing with this long enough time. We're way beyond feeling any sort of emotional reaction to this gibberish.
I think decolonize, it basically means removing white people. And they say it's because if something is colonized, it means it centers white people. But if you've got somebody who's white, like William Shakespeare, how would you decolonize that? I mean, the guy is white. So what they're saying is to decolonize it, to take away the white supremacy from it, you would have to make out that he was actually a really bad person and he owned black slaves, or he beat his wife, or he was just a generally horrible person, or a misogynist, a racist, which is what they're saying here. So that's what they mean by decolonize. It means that they just basically start throwing ad hominems at the character, and that's how they decenter whiteness. Well, in 2020,
yeah. See, go on. I'm sorry, I just gotta, because see, there's the problem with the lack of definition of terms, because for it to be colonizing, if say you went to one of the British, let's say go to India, one of the former British colonies, and if there was still this push for William Shakespeare in India, I could see using that, you know, saying, okay, well, he's white in India, which is a non-white country. So you could say there's a colonial aspect to it because he doesn't belong there. But Shakespeare is from England and he, you know, he's English. So there's no colonization because it's in his own country. You see what I'm saying? So again, there's no definition to the term. You sit there, we can sit and try to make up a definition, but it doesn't fit because how is it called have anything to do with colonization when, you know, if, like I say, if it was in a former colony, that isn't English, you could say, okay, well, yeah, I could see colonial aspects of that. But it's all centered in England. So how was he colonizing England? No, of course not. I'm sorry to interrupt, Sven. Go ahead.
That's all right. I mean, I think part of it is that because England is now multicultural, so they try to include everybody. And so they're saying, well, he's only the greatest playwright for white people. England's multicultural now. Why aren't you including all of these other playwrights? They might be just as good. Of course, they're not just as good. And England's only been multicultural for the last 50 years. And this is Shakespeare's birthplace. This is his village that he grew up in. So again, like, how can you decolonize that when it's never been colonized in the first place? The idea that it was colonized in the first place stems from this idea that Britain was always multicultural and it always had black people in it. I think that's where they get this from. As I was getting back to the article here, in 2022, a research project between the Trust and Dr. Helen Hopkins at the University of Birmingham postulated that the idea of Shakespeare's universal genius benefits the ideology of white European supremacy. Well, he was supreme. He was the best playwright. That's you can't argue against that. This is because European culture is portrayed as the standard for high art and the playwright as a symbol of British superiority, according to The Telegraph. The project said that this narrative has caused harm and advised that the Trust stop saying Shakespeare was the greatest, but part of a community of equal and different writers globally. Well, who are they putting forward then that was as good as Shakespeare from one of these other global writers? Well, they haven't actually got anybody. And they're saying Shakespeare's genius was universal. Well, no, it wasn't. He was a white man. And that's where this problem comes from. Because he's white, they don't like it. That's why they are attacking it. Now, European culture, they say here, is being portrayed as the standard for high art. And that's because it is the standard for high art. If you look at the art that came out of Africa, it's not realistic, is it? If you look at high-cultured European art, like the paintings that are on the ceilings of the Sistine Chapel, this amazing artwork that we used to have where their eyes follow you around the room, and you compare that to what they had in Africa, wooden carvings of heads, basically, outsized heads. You cannot actually compare the two. One is objectively a high form of art, and the other is objectively not as good as the European one. So we're effectively saying we have to say everything is equal, and we can see out here where it says about he's part of a community of equal and different writers globally. It means getting rid of all excellence. It means not rewarding people for excellence, not transcending things, which is what artwork is supposed to be. It's supposed to be a transcendent beauty. We have to drag everything down to the lowest common denominator and just get rid of excellence, basically. That's what all of this is. It's very, very Bolshevik. It's just about attacking anything that is good, because white people, like, whether they like it or not, have been responsible for a lot of good things in the past as well as bad. I guess they just want to highlight the bad. Grandpa, what do you make of this?
I chuckled when the first rattle out of the box on this segment that you read, you know, is the referencing back to 2022. What did I say at the opening? It's like we're 4 years ago. You know, this is something that's like the rest of the world's not doing this, or at least not here in America. I don't know about it, Europe, but it cracks me up that the UK is still like 4 years behind, still doing this. And we, you know, we moved out. They got story. I saw a story on the local news the other day. You know, the city of Dallas went in and, you know, stripped all the Black Lives Matter and the LGBT rainbow sidewalks off the street because nobody's doing that anymore. It's passe. It's like walking around. I said last week, it's like walking around in bell-bottom pants and wearing a mullet when nobody's doing that anymore. Everybody cut their hair and they're wearing normal pants. So the UK is very much out of step with the current trends. Yeah. Again, you have this, you know, they're referencing this project, you know, where Dr. Helen Hopkins of the University of Birmingham postulated the idea. Okay, who the hell is this? Okay, anybody can postulate anything. I can come on this show and postulate whatever. It might be complete nonsense. You know, I can say the Earth was created by space aliens. You know, I could postulate that. Why does Dr. Helen Hopkins, whoever that is, she postulates this and we're supposed to just take this as fact? This is a nod. They always fall back on credentialism. Oh, she's a doctor, has a doctorate, and at a university, the University of Birmingham. So her opinion carries weight, and I would bet she's an idiot. You know, most of these people are. They're idiots. You know, and she postulated, okay, that's fine. That means she has an opinion. I have an opinion too. What makes her opinion have more value? You know what I'm saying? That, you know, and yeah, and then again, most of it is just you go through it. The project said the narrative has caused harm. Okay. And they can say anything. Okay, harm to whom? Who has literally been harmed? Okay, who has been injured? Who has lost property? Who has lost money? Who has literally been harmed by this? And again, I would 100% guarantee you, if you were allowed to ask these questions, if you had real journalists doing this article, they would ask them. They couldn't tell you. And if they did tell you, you then followed up with, okay, define the harm that was caused. There's no harm. You know, they're claiming these people, I can assume because they're not going to tell us, you know, you're supposed to basically assume that somebody's feelings were hurt. And I would guarantee you nobody's feelings have been hurt. Nobody's sitting around going, oh my gosh, every time I see Shakespeare, I feel bad because he doesn't look like me. No one cares. These are just people sitting around talking at each other, and they form a committee and they get government money. And they come out with these diktats and feel really important and throw out a bunch of word salad in an article like this. And it's supposed to have in-depth meaning. There's no meaning here. Caused harm to who? Who was harmed? Tell us what the harm is. They don't, because there is none. It's all a lie. It's just supposed to keep everybody stirred up, you know, and thinking this is something really, you know, they're saving people from being harmed. No, they're not. They're all collecting government money somewhere. They're all sitting around in a little support group, basically talking at one another and not listening to anybody else.
Yeah, I think when they say this, people have been harmed by this. I think what they mean is black people are being told that the greatest playwright was a white man, and that's harmful to them because they're black and they want the greatest playwright to be written by a black man. But perhaps they would be told about black playwrights if they were living in Africa. But even if they were in Africa, they would still be told that Shakespeare was the best playwright, because objectively he was. I mean, it was only a couple of months back we were being told that Shakespeare was, in actual fact, a black female Jewess. And now we're being told that Shakespeare is just far too white. I mean, it seems to me that they just have it in for Shakespeare. As I say, they have it in for excellence. And people that aren't excellent, a lot of them do have a resentment against the people that are excellent. I mean, if you just look at politics, a lot of it is about class, and it's about stoking jealousy of people that have got more than others. And there is this temptation to resent other people because they've had better luck, or they've had better fortune in life, or their parents did better things for them. And really, you should look at them and just think, well, I'm glad that they had life a little bit easier than me. I'm glad that some people get a life that's easier than me. Wouldn't it be horrible if everybody had a terrible life like me? That's the way that people should look at things, not out of resentment, out of excellence, because somebody is good at doing something. Now, Shakespeare's Birthplace Trust later received funding from the Esme Fairbairn Foundation, which finances projects that boost diversity and inclusion. Well, again, why is this foundation giving money to the Shakespeare's Birthplace Trust? I mean, what does that have to do with diversity and inclusion? Well, it doesn't. And they're giving them the money because they want to force the diversity and the inclusion into it. Some of its organised events celebrated Bengali poet Rabindranath Tagore and a Romeo and Juliet inspired Bollywood dance workshop. The trust also promised to remove offensive language from its collections. Some of the items at the trust include archived material, literary criticism, books linked to the writer, and gifts from around the world offered in honour of him. A statement from the trust said, "As part of our ongoing work, we have undertaken a project which explores our collections to ensure they are as accessible as possible. Again, this word here, accessible, what do they mean? Do they mean so that people can get in there in wheelchairs? No, what they mean is that this, they should be promoting poets from Bangladesh, and they should be doing Bollywood dance workshops for Indians, even though they only make up a tiny minority, actually, out of the people that live in Britain. They're saying we have to change everything to suit these newcomers, which really says that these newcomers are occupying the place and they're taking over. Because if we have to change things like this to suit them, then that's really what is implied by that, isn't it? I mean, that's what an occupier would do. If an invading force came in and occupied the country, they would then order the people that were there in the country to create statues of them, create images of them that look like them to represent the fact that they are the people that have taken over. And yet we're supposed to not see this like that. We're supposed to see this as a wonderful thing, because it's being inclusive and it's helping other people to appreciate our history. But it's not, is it? It's rubbishing our history and it's lying to people about it. Grandpa, what do you make of this here with this this trust?
Well, I always lament not having an actual functioning independent press, which we don't in the West. They talk about the free press. There's no free press. They're all controlled. Because if you had a free press, you know, for instance, if I was given this article and say, you do this and we're going to publish it in the Daily Mail. Okay, one of the things I would do as a part of my writing and my research is I would find out who runs the SME Fairborn Foundation. And then I would find out where they get their money from, because the money didn't just appear. They got their money from somewhere and they decided to put it to this trust. Where does the money come from? So somebody gave it. And does that somebody, and does the people that run this foundation, you know, do they have a political dog in this fight? You know, do they have an agenda? I mean, I don't know that. I haven't researched it because I don't care, because I know it's all a lie. But if you handed me this, if the Daily Mail said, GPD, we want you to start writing some articles here, we're going to hand you this, do this article, you know, that would be one of the things I would do. I'd put resources out and find out who is this SME Fairbanks Foundation, and why are they giving money? Where did the money come from? Who are the donors? Who runs the foundation? Because somebody has somebody has a motivation here. One of the common things you see on all of this sort of stuff is, in the name of all of this inclusion stuff, they don't actually, they're not building anything up. You know, all they can do is tear things down. We see this over and over again to the point to where it's just out in the open, but they don't create anything new. You know, they're not saying, you know, they on the one hand, they say, oh, well, you know, people of different races, they're not represented enough. Okay, we'll build those people up then. But they don't. It's about tearing down what exists. All they can do, they're like locusts that come in, you know, biblical locust swarms, and they come in. And you know, I'm talking about these groups. I'm not talking about these other races of people, just to make sure we're not being misunderstood here. These groups like this, they come in and they tear the institution down. They tear the history down. They tear whatever was built. And then they move on to the next thing. They never build something up because they can't. They don't have that. All they can do is come in and tear everything down. And then when it's a big smoldering mess, they say, there, look what we did. Look what we've accomplished. I read an article the other day. It's a little bit of a tangent, but it is also kind of relevant here. And I can't remember who wrote it. I don't remember where it was. It was more mainstream article, and this, it was concerning the UK, and you may be familiar with this, but apparently they're having a debate in the parliament or whatever. They're talking about decriminalizing everything, you know, to do with abortion, and people are complaining about it and say, well, this will legalize abortion up to right before the birth, and they're trying to say, oh no, that'll still remain illegal. But it's a word game, because if there's no criminal penalty, you know, then you've de facto legalized it. And the person writing this opinion piece was pointing out, you know, who is this aimed towards? And they said, you know, when you have the UK government doing things like this, while at the same time importing all these people from the Middle East, Africa, and places like that, you know, he said, you know, all these people have been talking about the great replacement. That doesn't sound like a kooky conspiracy theory anymore, does it? All of this stuff is, sorry, that's why I think it's so silly that they're still doing this stuff from 2022 here, because now it's so obvious, you know, you're not going to be able to dismiss this stuff as crazy conspiracy theory anymore, because a lot more people realize this is a lot more out in the open now. And yeah, I see the next parts are going to get into, Sven. Now we're going further back. We're back to 2021. Like I said, this whole thing is deja vu. It's like we're 4 or 5 years behind the times, and the UK still hasn't caught up.
Well, I just looked up the Esme Fairbairn Foundation, and they say they aim to improve our natural world, secure a fairer future, and strengthen the bonds in communities in the UK. Well, how do they go about strengthening the bonds in communities in the UK? Because it seems to me that they're basically trying to destroy the bonds of the white community by saying that white people weren't actually any good, by trying to decolonize things like William Shakespeare and the place that he lives. I mean, that's really an attack on the white community. Is that the only way that they can strengthen communities in the UK, is by attacking the white community? Because if that's so, then that's a very negative thing. I mean, it just says that diversity is a failure, really, if the only way that you can strengthen one community is at the expense of another, which of course is a fact, and diversity is a failure. Well, in 2021, the Globe Theatre launched a project to decolonise Shakespeare's famous plays, while experts claimed his work is problematic for linking whiteness to beauty. The London Theatre, which is a reconstruction of the Elizabethan Playhouse where William Shakespeare wrote his work, has begun anti-racist seminars to discuss decolonising Shakespeare's esteemed plays. Experts claim that the Bard's plays are problematic for linking whiteness to beauty, while an academic said all of Shakespeare's plays are race plays, as they all contain whiteness. Well, they were written by somebody who was white, so they would, I guess, contain whiteness because of that. Also in 2021, it was reported that a growing number of woke academics are refusing to teach Shakespeare in US schools, arguing that the Bard promotes racism, white supremacy, and intolerance, and instead are pushing for the teaching of modern alternatives. Well, there were very, very few black people in the country at the time of Shakespeare, so I don't really understand how he could have been racist. I mean, there was a few there. It was in the time of Elizabeth I, and there were a few black slaves, and people were writing to Elizabeth I and saying, look, this is really unfair. You have Englishmen that are starving and would love to be owned by somebody, and yet you have these black African slaves who are being fed by their master. And Elizabeth I said, well, we'll get rid of them all. And she hired boats to take them back to Portugal, basically. So there were a few black people around at this time. But and Shakespeare made a play about one of them, I believe, one of the, you know, Othello, that has a black character in it. So how can they accuse him of racism or white supremacy or intolerance? I mean, these things just didn't exist in Elizabethan times. Writing in School Library Journal, Amanda McGregor, a Minnesota-based librarian, bookseller and freelance journalist, asked why teachers were continuing to include Shakespeare in their classrooms. Well, possibly because he's the greatest playwright ever. Shakespeare's works are full of problematic, outdated ideas with plenty of misogyny, racism, homophobia, classism, anti-Semitism, and misogynoir, she wrote, with the last word referring to a hatred of black women. Where does this hatred of black women come out? I mean, this is Elizabethan England. There really weren't any black people in this country. And of course it's going to have outdated ideas. It was written 300 years ago. But the point of it is that the way that it's written and the language that it is written in is so clever. I mean, I don't particularly enjoy reading Shakespeare. When I was in prison, we had a Shakespeare reading group and we were reading Macbeth, and a lot of the language was very outdated, but you could see that it was cleverly put together. And that was the point of it. It was so cleverly put together. And nobody else ever has ever put plays together in such a clever way. That's the reason why people are reading it. It's not because it's full of hatred of women and hatred of black women. That's just something that they've tacked onto it today. Again, just in order to attack white people and attack white heritage. Grandpa, what do you make of this? Misogy Noir, that's a new one on me. Is it you?
Yeah. Well, I think it's hilarious that they're trying to drag, like the U.S. is doing this too, but they had to go back to 2021 to bring up, because, like I say, this is kind of passe here in the U.S., but they want to make it sound like it's not just the U.K. being literally insane. See, the U.S. is doing the same thing, but they had to go back to 2021 to find an example. Once again, you see this whole, they're referencing experts say, academics say, they're not telling us who any of these people are. The only person that gets named here might as well be a literal who from Twitter. I mean, you know, oh, Amanda McGregor. Huh, everybody's heard of her. No, I haven't. Well, who is this? She was writing in a school library journal. Wow, there's a widely read publication, a school library journal that, you know, and oh, she's a Minnesota-based librarian. Just literal who off Twitter is who they're quoting as an expert here. They throw around terms like experts and academics. They're not naming anybody. And then when they do get around to naming somebody, it's a literal who from Twitter. A freelance journalist. Well, you can call me a freelance journalist too. I mean, that's a title with no actual meaning. And of course, she's asking why teachers were continued to, you know, who cares why you're asking? You know, who? Why is she somebody that gets to demand an answer? And yeah, no, that you're misogynoir. See, you can always spot a real moron. They go and find some word and throw it out there like that, because you're what that's supposed to do. There's a reason they do that. There's a reason behind that. They throw that out there, and you're supposed to sit there and go be blown away by they're using this word that you've never heard of. So it's supposed to make you feel like, well, the person saying that is smarter than me. So it's supposed to make you want to be quiet so that you don't question the other gibberish that they're throwing out there. You know, I can always spot a moron when they go and do something like that. And I can guarantee you Amanda McGregor is probably a moron if you get down to it. If she wasn't a moron, she'd have a better paying gig than freelance journalist librarian, you know, a bookseller. Well, you know, the person, if Barnes and Noble still existed, the person working behind the counter at the cash register at the bookstore is a bookseller. It's a fancy title for something with no actual meaning. They always wanted to, they throw these terms out here, experts, academics. It's credentialism. Again, this is designed to make you think these people are smarter than you, so don't question them. And when they throw a word like that out, it's supposed to intimidate you into being silent, you know, because you don't want to sound stupid. If this was being done live, you wouldn't want to be the one guy stand up and raise your hand and say, what's that word mean? What does any of this mean? They can't answer these things. That's why they don't want you asking the question, because they themselves, it doesn't, most of this stuff, it's appeals to authority, credentialism, undefined terms that are supposed to elicit an emotional response from you, and they need people to just accept it, you know, to just say, shut up and say, these people must be smarter than me and they must know what they're talking about. But again, it's silly because they're having to go back to 2021, because a lot of people, I like to think a lot of people have caught on to this, at least to the point where they don't sit there and nod their heads and go, well, maybe these people know what they're talking about. The UK is going to have to get with the times, Finn.
You do seem to quite enjoy making that point that America has given up on this, but Britain is still going through it. And just to give the article the benefit of the doubt, there are a lot of hyperlinks embedded in this. So when it says things like an academic, the link may actually refer to the name. As I say, I'm just giving them the benefit of the doubt, but they should actually put the name there. And certainly just using a librarian from Massachusetts, As you say, I mean, that could just be anybody, couldn't it? Others contended the latest woke trend is short-sighted, not taking into account the lessons that Shakespeare still can teach for today, with one New York Times best-selling author accusing schools that jettison the writer as flushing great literature down the drain. And I have to say, there is actually no link there for this New York Times best-selling author. In 2023, The Globe gave Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream a misogynism and racism warning. The comedy, telling the tale of four rebellious lovers who get lost in a magical forest, is set to run from April as part of the venue's summer programme. The warning read, content guidance. The play contains language of violence, sexual references, misogyny, and racism. The online guidance ends with a plea to those concerned about its themes to contact the ticketing team for further details on the play's content. The venue is a replica of the original Globe Theatre, where Shakespeare's plays were first seen, so is closely associated with the Bard. A spokesman for the Globe said at the time, content guidance is written in advance of the creation of each production and based on what is present in the play, and these will be updated as the production comes to life. Imagine that. They give a warning and then they tell you to go and contact the ticket staff if you're concerned about this and you want to find out more. I guess they would refer them to charities that deal with misogyny and racism. I mean, it's supposed to be a comedy, A Midsummer Night's Dream. It's a piece of its time, basically. I've read summaries of it before. I've certainly never seen anything in it that made me think that there was any hatred of women or hatred of black people in it. I don't think there are any black people in it, come to think about it. Grandpa, what do you make of this?
Is this article supposed to be a recent history lesson? Again, why are we writing an article? Why are they writing an article about something from 2023? Who cares? You know, this isn't even current events. They're going, you know, and now we're in 2023. The Globe gave this warning. You know, again, who cares? The whole thing about contact the ticket, that's an attempt, you know, that's a signaling to they wanted people to call up an outrage so they could get it canceled, I'm sorry, and, you know, claim a scalp, so as to speak. Like, look what we've done. We've accomplished something. And of course, I haven't accomplished anything. They just try to tear things down. But I'm finding you can't apply logic to this because it's just an agenda, but it's fun to try. You know, the logic of why they're covering a story from 2023, you know, I could understand in 2023, this might have been news, but it's not news in 2026. You know, it just seems. It seems pretty silly to me, Sven.
Well, the website's warning came after education experts at the theatre, who intend to decolonise Shakespeare's work, also attacked the play for its misogyny. A major comic plotline is King Oberon giving a love potion to Queen Titania, so she falls for the ass-headed character Bottom. But academics have claimed this is troubling because Titania is drugged, so she cannot consent. Hayley Bachrach, the founder of the education project Shakespeare and Consent, said that this kind of plotline can make Shakespeare problematic. Well, hang on a minute. It's King Oberon and Queen Titania. And this is going back 200 years ago. Women were seen as property. He was married to this woman, so she had to do whatever he said to her to do. Whether that's right or wrong, that's just the way that it was back then. And I think he's trying to play a bit of a joke on her by giving her this love potion so that she falls for an ass-headed character Bottom. It's just a joke. It's not saying that this is something that people should replicate, and it gives you an idea of the sort of thinking that there was at the time. There was a belief in love potions. I mean, that it's long been a part of fairy tales and things like that, is giving a love potion to try and make somebody fall in love with you. And they would never start talking about consent if it was a female giving the love potion to a male. It's only the fact that it's a male giving the love potion to a female. And it's actually King Oberon of the fairies giving the love potion to Queen Titania of the fairies, basically. So it's talking about the fairy folk who play lots of mean tricks on humans anyway, so they really shouldn't be held to the same moral standards as we are. Grandpa, any thought about this, about giving love potions to Queen Titania?
Are we still talking about 2023, or is this a more current event? I'm a little confused here, but I'm assuming they're still talking about this happened in 2023. Because they're talking in the past tense. The warning came after, once again, education experts, whoever they are, who no doubt have no political axe to grind at all, just independently came out. Yeah, and yeah, it's a comedy. They even admit in the story here, it's a comedy. So if you're going to turn something from a comedy into some sort of serious message, then it's not really comedy anymore, is it? I remember when I was a kid, there were certain channels here in the U.S. and you could get Benny Hill on it, and I love Benny Hill. I thought Benny Hill was hilarious, and I couldn't picture having Benny Hill anymore, because you would have to make everything, there would have to be all these warnings. And at least in 2023, I guess in the UK, even in 2026. But I always thought Benny Hill was funny. It was just silly, very vaudevillian. And yet you couldn't have that anymore. If it's going to be a comedy, you're not going to be able to turn it into something serious and try. They just don't want anybody to be able to laugh and have something funny. And again, this is these are obviously very old plays, so the comedy may kind of fall a little flat in modern times, but still, it's a comedy, and they're trying to get everybody to act like, these serious, violations of what's allowed. Because that's the overall thing here, isn't it, Sven? What is allowed and what is not? This is, if you step back, this is what they're telling us. Certain things are allowed and certain things are not. But that it without actually saying that, of course, because if they actually said, we're telling you these things are allowed and these things are not, then that would beg the question, well, why? And who are you? Who are these experts? Again, these experts. Well, Haley Bacharach, whoever the hell that is, says so. Well, okay. Who is Haley Bacharach to tell everybody what is and is not allowed? That's what they're saying. If you step back, they're saying certain things are allowed and certain things are not. And we're the ones who are going to tell you what is allowed and what is not. But where do they get any authority? Why do these people have authority? They just woke up one day and said, we're the ones that have authority, and we're going to tell you what's allowed and what's not. Now, in this context, we're talking about Shakespeare, which doesn't have a lot to do with me or you and our modern times. But when you realize the overall theme with this, the narrative here is you have unnamed people, and the people that are named are literal who's, nobody knows who they are, that are allowed to tell you what is and is not allowed. It doesn't matter if you're talking about Shakespeare or if you're talking about something happening today, if you're talking about current events. When you surrender the ground that one group of people is allowed to dictate to the other group of people what you are and are allowed or are and are not allowed to say, are and are not allowed to find funny, then you've surrendered your own autonomy. Why do these people get to die? Who made Haley Bacharach somebody that's an authority that gets to tell me or you whether or not you're allowed to watch Shakespeare and find this play funny? I probably wouldn't find it funny because it's outdated humor. But who are they? Why do they have that authority? And again, if they're allowed to have the authority on this topic, then that means they or somebody like them has that authority on any other topic, any other subject. And once they get you habituated to the idea that you look towards somebody else to tell you what you're allowed or not allowed to say, to think, there's the problem with controlling that stuff, because if they can control what you're allowed to say, ultimately they're allowed to control what you think. So it does apply to these other areas. So you stand back and say, well, that's why I make fun of this and say, who are these people? And why do they think they have all of this authority to tell me what I'm allowed to think is funny? I think Benny Hill is funny. Probably wouldn't find this play funny, but I don't care. Somebody else might. And it's just, it doesn't, you know, who are these people to tell me or you or anybody else that they're not allowed to like it? They're not allowed to watch it. They're not allowed to pay tickets to go to the theater to see it if they want to do so. They're just self-appointed, apparently, or appointed by somebody and proclaimed to be experts and proclaimed to be authority over the rest of us. And they don't. They don't have any authority over us. And, you know, there kind of is the inherent weakness in all of this. They're trying to convince everybody that they're the authorities. And by golly, you all better shut up and do what we say. And if you say, you're nobody, I don't even know who you are, shut the hell up. You know, get out of here. You can't tell me what to watch, what to say, what I like or what I don't like, what I think is funny. And, you know, you kind of cut the ground right out from under them when you realize that they don't have any actual authority. And that all starts to become really obvious the minute you start questioning it.
I think also before we had multiculturalism, the idea of drugging somebody, it wouldn't happen. So that's why it happens here, because it's not something that would happen. And that's why people find it funny. They're not talking about giving young ladies Rohypnol so that they can date rape them. I mean, this is something modern that has come about since multiculturalism. Back here at this time, it was out of the ordinary, and it was part of the joke was the fact that she couldn't consent. And clearly the people that have said, putting these warnings on there, they don't get the joke. Another problematic plotline is Hermia fleeing Athens because she must choose between marrying against her will or being executed or placed in a convent. Some academics say Shakespeare creates a dark-light binary, which casts dark or black as negative and white or fair as positive. Well, that's correct, isn't it? Black is nothing. Black is the void. And there is a binary between darkness and light. And that's just the world that we live in. It's not Shakespeare that's creating that. It's life itself. The Globe has sought to address the more troubling aspects of Shakespeare's work with its anti-racist Shakespeare seminars. In these seminars, education experts have said that the bard's language was racializing. For example, the first line of A Midsummer Night's Dream is said to set out the racial divide clearly straight away. Now, fair Hippolyta. And of course, fair is associated with beautiful, and it's also associated with white people. I mean, you really couldn't call a black person fair because they're not fair skinned, are they? Fair means to be light skinned. Again, you've got this divide there between darkness and light, and it's just a fact of life. It's a part of life. We're really just trying to deny reality here with all of this, and that's what the left does. It denies reality. Unlike Othello, which features a key non-white character, the play is not typically viewed as a race play, but experts believe that racial slurs lie in the insults used by the play's characters. So how can they say that Shakespeare was racist when a key character in his play Othello wasn't actually white? I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. And to say that they're not allowed to refer to people as being fair anymore, I guess, because fair is linked with beauty. I mean, what are we supposed to say instead? They're swarthy. You know, they're dark when they're not. They're actually fair-skinned. I mean, it talks in the Bible about people being fair and fair-skinned. And clearly, it's they're biblical characters. It's one of the ways that we can tell that the people in the Bible were actually white, because it refers to them as fair. It's a common term. Grandpa, what are your final thoughts on all of this today?
I just had to chuckle because, you know, once again, our unnamed academics say Shakespeare creates a dark light binary, which casts dark or black as negative and white as fair as positive. And, you know, a dark light binary. So I'm assuming they're trying to take a plot line about good and evil and somehow twisting that up to be about race. I mean, this is a sort of ridiculous word games, word salad, mental gymnastics, word spells, whatever you want to call it, that these people do. They sit there, oh, it creates a, you know, dark white binary. And then they say, that's about race. And I don't think it is. I don't think any of these experts, I don't think any of these academics actually even know what they're talking about. They're just trying to be important and trying to tear something down. They can't create anything good. You know, they referenced earlier in this story, you know, talk about a Bollywood production. You know, I'm not offended by that. If Indians want to make something, you know, good for them, they're making something. I mean, I'm not going to watch it because it doesn't have anything to do to me. I don't have any, you know, not, don't think I would find it entertaining. You know, I don't feel it. How do these people even think? You know, when they talk about a Bollywood production, I don't feel this urge like, man, if I had the way, I would find a way to tear that down. So those Indians, what are these Indians doing having a production? They're not including white people in it. We need to find a way to tear that down and destroy. I don't feel any urge. Do you? No, do, is anybody listening to this? No, you don't care. I mean, I'm probably not going to watch it because they made it for Indians. They didn't make it for me. Yeah, you have these people and they can't make anything. You know, at least the Indians are doing Bollywood productions. They're making stuff. They're making their own productions. These people in articles like this, they can't make anything. All they can do is try to tear stuff down, try to destroy it. You know, make it. It's like they're doing what they're doing is the Gaza Strip to the culture. They don't know how to build anything nice. They just know how to carpet bomb the culture and the history. And then when it's a big smoldering pile of rubble, they dust their hands off and they say, look what a great job we did. And they haven't built anything. All they know is how to do is tear it down. Normal people don't think like that. You know, I mean, I don't have the desire to tear anybody's culture down. You know, why don't they? The hypocrisy, because none of this means anything. You know, they have it in the Shakespearean playhouse while whining about there's no Afrocentric stuff. Then go have it in an African hut if you're worried about that. You know, it's just they don't make anything. Normal people don't feel the desire to go tear somebody down. You know, I wouldn't go to Africa and tear down their mud hut and make fun of them because, look, your house looks stupid. It's got, you know, leaves on the roof. I don't feel the desire to do that. Normal people don't. And it's quite telling that people like the ones featured in this article, they do have that urge. And it begs the question, why? Why are they obviously one of the things that was so, again, this is from years ago from the U.S. standpoint. But one of the things that's always striking is why do these people always, I mean, they obviously have a lot of just like bitterness and anger and hatred, you know, if you want to use that term, you know, for the culture, for everything. And they just want to destroy it. It really makes you wonder what makes somebody tick, what makes somebody like that, you know, think in that way.
Well, it seems to me they just want to force brown people into everything. And this idea that Shakespeare racialized things by coming up with this binary of darkness and light. God invented the binary of darkness and light in the first chapter of Genesis. As I say, it's part of reality. And what they're really trying to do is they're making war against reality. That's what the left does. It makes war against everything that's true, everything that's good, everything that's beautiful. And we can see that in here where it says, well, we've got to attack Shakespeare because he links beauty to being white. So, again, they're just attacking beauty and attacking the truth. Well, thank you very much for coming on here today, Grandpa. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.